Welcome to Deeper Insights, a podcast produced by Construction and Demolition Recycling Magazine that takes you deeper into the stories featured on our covers. We hear the voices of the leaders of demo firms, aggregate recyclers, and mixed C&D recyclers as they share their stories of growth, challenges, and successes, and hopes for the future. We'll learn about the history of the industry, its people, and the new technology that will lead it to greater heights.
Shelley Mann, Managing Editor of Construction and Demolition Recycling Magazine. Today, we're talking with Terrell Garrett, founder of Greenway Recycling, a C&D recycling facility in Portland, Oregon, named the 2024 Recycler of the Year by the Construction and Demolition Recycling Association.
I'm hoping we could start by just, if you could give me a quick hit history and background of your company and how long you've been doing this.
I was gutting out and rebuilding old buildings in inner north, northeast Portland, making artist lofts for rent. And I tore up my elbow and the doctor said, find a new occupation or I'm going to cut and bind it for 6 months. And through a series of crazy events, I ended up buying a small garbage collection franchise from a family that had had a death. And out of that, in the beginning, I wanted to process material and recycle it. And it took a few years to get to that point, but it kind of morphed into that. And we started as a yard debris reload with my wife, Chris, and our three daughters in the office. And Chris would lock the kids in the office and go out in the yard and get on her little trusty wheel loader and push up the loads and bill people. And I was loading the truck and driving the truck and hauling the yard debris to a composting facility. And so it really started down, you know, pretty down home family, and has grown from there to where we're a full-fledged material recovery facility, handling commercial, industrial, and construction demolition type waste. And try to sort them and hopefully making a living doing it.
Yeah. Wow. So how old were your kids back when you started?
Oh gosh, 2002. I think the twins were about 4 and Sheridan was 8.
Okay.
I have 3 girls.
Okay. All right. And they
have their own office with their blankets and pillows and the dogs and a TV and a bunch of VHS videos.
Perfect. Okay. Well, let's talk about your facility. So it's just one facility. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Okay. And I was hoping you could kind of tell me, give me kind of a background on the history of the facility, especially up until recently. I know you recently had an upgrade.
We started in 2002, I believe it was, or 2003, as a yard debris reload. We moved from that into accepting source separated wood, having an outside company come in and grind it for us and sending it as boiler fuel to the paper mills. Then took over the grinding ourselves. From there, we moved into reloading construction, demolition, industrial, commercial, dry waste to WRI in Wilsonville, where it was sorted on a simple sort line. Then finally, in 2008, we put in our own sort line and started doing our own sorting. At the time, it was a fairly innovative line. I think that we were, if not the first, we were among the first in the United States to utilize air separation on dry waste back then. And then in, I think it was 2018-19, I looked around and said, we need to upgrade and plan for the future. And so this was just before COVID, and we ended up through a series of events completely rebuilding the facility. And because of COVID, borrowing money became very, very difficult. We had 2 significant size loans that were canceled due to COVID. So that made the whole project extremely challenging. And in the end, we had to do almost the whole project ourselves. So what happened was, is we took a bunch of guys that knew how to run excavators and wheel loaders and sort garbage, and turned them into millwrights. And they learned how to weld, they learned how to fit things, they learned how to build things, and in the case of a couple of them, even how to run cranes. I would say over 80% of the facility rebuild was done, we did ourselves. And that's using, like I say, equipment operators all the way down to laborers. And thing is, one of those laborers really stepped up, and he now runs the system. And he is in charge of making sure it runs all day, every day. And if it breaks, getting it running again. So we like to bring, when possible, people up from inside our company. I find that they're much, much better employees. And they don't have the bad habits. They understand the facility, and they are fiercely loyal.
How many employees do you have?
I think there's 16 of us.
And does your wife still work with you at the company?
Well, she comes in and does the deposits. But more importantly, her involvement is... perfect example is that I didn't get to work until 9:30 this morning because we sat at home on the couch and talked about buying a used screen.
Okay.
We made the decision this morning to buy it. So she's very, very involved in those type of decisions and mm-hmm. is very well versed in everything that goes on.
Going back to the facility, what were some of the, I know you talked about in your application for the CDRA award, some innovative machinery and automation you were hoping to integrate. Can you talk about what are some of the things that you integrated into the new facility and what other equipment and technology you use?
Well, the heart of the system is the Ballistor. And to my understanding, there are only three of them running on C&D in the nation today. I believe that it is an absolute game changer. I believe that the more we can split up these flows into more size and like homogenous flows, the better job we can do of sorting them and gaining the recyclables. The Ballistor is the machine that really starts that whole process, makes that cut to move you out of the world of this jumbled pile of junk running past laborers trying to dig through it and pick something out to professional, for lack of a better term, deconstruction or demanufacturing of the solid waste flow. And so starting with the Ballistor and then moving into more and more screens, magnets, et cetera, air separators, water separators. I think what we've been able to do is to have machines do a lot of the quality control or QC function that most facilities have to put people on so that we can put our people to better use. And, you know, people will always be part of the equation. They're never going mm-hmm. away. I just think that by adding more and more machines, what we're doing is we're able to do a better job of recovery. And, you know, especially in the area of what you might call the fines, let's say the 5-inch minus fraction, you cannot afford to put humans on it. But it is an incredible recycle rich flow that we've been able to do a pretty good job of capturing mechanically. To me, I was speaking with an equipment manufacturer last week. Our segment of the market is not large enough for companies to really purpose-build machines for us for single-stream recycling, which is a much, much bigger, more developed marketplace than us. And so we are forced to adapt others' equipment, be from single stream or from aggregate applications or from farming. The way we have to achieve success is we have to be willing to look at things they do in other industries and machines they use and say, how can we make this work for us? Because like I say, there's not enough of us to justify people going out and doing the R&D and saying, we're going to build this machine just for 150 of you. So that's been the challenge, and actually a whole lot of the fun is, you know, how to adapt these machines. You know, we have one of, to my understanding, two water separators running in the United States right now.
Mm.
That's to my understanding, best I can tell. I have a water separator that's about 3/4 done that we're building from scratch, hoping to better the design. We have to, I think, build some of our own machines. They're just not available. And that's what we're trying to do with this water separator that we're building. It's a large scale one. And that's a lot of fun. It's also fear that I'm going to have quite an expensive boat anchor if it doesn't work. But
and what does the water separator do in the facility?
In our facility, our three-dimensional cut, we want to leave the aggregate, concrete, brick, rock in with the wood.
Mm-hmm.
And through the combination of an air separator, pull out the concrete, brick, rock from the wood, but they're never perfect. And then use this water separator for the secondary cleanup and final cleanup of the concrete. So this water separator takes a quality control function is what it does.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The existing water separator we're using cleans up concrete, brick, rock from the 5-inch minus flow after it goes through an air separator. So it just, you know, like I say, it's back to that. Let's make it cleaner because the market requires it. I do think that, you know, that's something in our industry. As we go along, we're going to have to make better and better products. The era of shipping ground wood or hog fuel that is full of trash is long over. And I do believe that's the future, is that we have to produce quality.
Do you have any other examples of equipment or technology that you've borrowed from other industries and repurposed in your facility?
This is something that's coming to our industry right now, is foaming for dust control. And you have to have a device that mixes the, in our case, the Dawn dish soap,
mm-hmm,
with water and air. What we use is, we use janitorial foamers rather than a purpose-built deal. We found that we could save a ton of money and do the same thing with janitorial foamers.
Mm-hmm.
They're also out there are chicken foamers that they use in the poultry industry. And so that's an example. Bringing in stuff from the wood products industry, we're about to start using a flip flow screen on shingle grinding. I don't know of anybody else that's doing that way. We use a lot of conveyors here. I grew up in an agribusiness family and around and in grain elevators. And so I'm very comfortable with conveyors and the efficiencies that they bring. And I think in our system, we have 28 or 29 conveyors. And a part of the reason for that is I really want to get things to where they need to be with a conveyor rather than a wheel loader. It helps with cross-contamination of materials, product cleanliness, and also just not have the wheel loader running around for no reason. And we're on a very, very small, tight parcel of land. We have less than 2 acres that we operate on.
Oh, wow.
And this facility has capacity to handle probably 120, 130,000 tons a year.
Mm-hmm.
And on 2 acres, that's a challenge. So any way that we can automate or move things with something that's not driving around is a good thing.
So what is the scope of the operation? How many tons of material are you processing annually?
Right now, of total material for the facility, it's about 80,000.
Okay.
Of total material through the facility. You know, Portland is not doing well. Our downtown district is very unhealthy. And so because of, I know that we have a stated commercial vacancy rate of about 27%.
Okay.
But I believe that that's not the right number to look at. I think that, mm-hmm, we need to look at what I would call an effective vacancy rate that includes the fact that so many workers are now only in the office 1 or 2 days a week. So let's say a worker is in the office 2 days a week. That means 60% vacancy. So I think that our true effective vacancy rate downtown is over 50%. We have multiple buildings, large buildings, that are either have just gone into foreclosure or are about to. And so we're not seeing the tenant improvement. We're not seeing the new projects in the pipeline. And so that has brought our volumes down significantly.
Okay. Do you focus on any certain C&D material?
No, we're in a marketplace where we take everything we can get.
Okay.
And so in actuality, probably 60%, 65% of what we receive is what I would classify as commercial and industrial drop box waste. The remainder being construction demolition. So that construction, I mean, that commercial industrial waste is much lower recovery than the C&D. And that's something that we're working on this tight postage stamp piece of dirt, is how do we run it separate so that we can get a better measurement of the C&D portion. And that's something that we've started discussions with RCI about, you know, Recycling Certifications Institute. So we've started those discussions with him about, hey, how can we get a better measure of the C&D flow for our lead numbers? And we are the only RCI certified facility in Oregon. Waste Management in Hillsboro is registered, and I believe and hope that they get their certification within the next few weeks. I think that it's having these facilities certified is for the betterment of the industry. It provides transparency in recovery rates, the truth forward. And that's very, very important. And that's something that we're starting with our local regional government, Metro, right now, is because of COVID, pretty much all the MRF standards for recovery were removed. And so right now we have facilities in the area that are just reloading. And we're starting discussions right now for new MRF standards. And I'm working with the legislative committee with the CDRA on that. We have a meeting April 4th, and this is on the agenda. I'm working with Stephen there at RCI, and basically working with Terry Ward. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull all the national knowledge I can. And thankfully, these people are willing to share their knowledge of what works, what doesn't work, what their ideas are, their experiences. And we're including our regional government, Metro. One of their employees has been assigned to be part of those meetings with me. So that we can bring that national knowledge into Portland to come up with some really good rules. And so this company, while I'm continuing to pull tons of knowledge and experience from various CDRA members about processes and equipment, we're now adding that legislative regulatory area to what we're trying to learn. From everybody else. And I, you know, after so many years of running alone, having this knowledge base behind me and around me is really neat and helpful.
So in terms of what are some of the recyclables that you're marketing, that you're recovering? Like, what are your end market and
just
products?
The standard wood, metal, cardboard, concrete, aggregate. Our recyclable markets are not very strong, and there are no markets for plastics. We have the capability to pull plastics quite easily with our system, and that was one of the things that we really looked at in the beginning when we budgeted it, but things changed for the worse. And we just watch the plastics go by right to the garbage. We shake our head. To me, our boiler fuel market is a finite market, both in terms of volume and longevity. We have to find a better product for this wood fiber. And I'm hoping to start some experiments and do some weird stuff with that this fall. I doubt that my ideas will be fruitful, but you have to try. And then the next one that really, really drives me nuts is 10% of what comes into my facility is painted wood that I have no market at all for. So whoever figures these things out is really going to change things. I think that, you know, the opportunities here for us are in the wood, hopefully down the road in the plastics, and also in the roofing, which enjoyed a spurt of success and then died here in this region. And we're now starting to work with, and again, here we are that Thursday night at in Florida, and I lost my wife. She spent the evening with the people from St. Gobain, Certainty. talking about shingle recycling. So she has conned me into, we're going to make another go at it.
Well, talking about the regional market, how would you describe your regional market and what are some of the challenges and opportunities you faced?
Oregon claims to be really, really green, but in practice, the regulators tend to start with the word no or can't. And I think that other areas of the country are much more willing to look at alternative uses, methods, and whatnot for materials. Example would be shingle recycling. While it is permitted on state highways, they make it so hard that you just can't. And that's what killed it. And I think that that is a lot of our problem, is that we don't have the governmental support for experimentation that we need. And the willingness to think out of the box, you know, as far as drywall recovery, an example would be, they say you can have no paper left in the drywall. Okay, this stuff's going out on a farm. What's going to happen to the paper if you stick it under the ground? It's wood fiber. It's going to become humus, which is good. Okay, so why do you say no to this? That's kind of, you know, the logic does not survive well here, a lot of these things. And I do say, will say that there are a number of people in government here that are forward thinking, but they're perhaps a little bit outnumbered. And, you know, Portland, which for many, many years enjoyed that mantra of being the number one recycler in the U.S., kind of has rested on its laurels and is now just realizing that maybe they're way, way behind other areas. Or, uh-oh, maybe we need to do something about this. It's going to take a while for the pendulum to swing. And I think that is our biggest challenge.
How does your company adapt to changes in the recycling landscape or those regulatory pendulum swings?
I am fortunate enough to have a crew that tolerates my insanity. We're small. We're very, very nimble. So when I decide all of a sudden out of the blue, we're going to make a huge change in something physically or process-wise, our people, for some reason, have figured out it's okay to tolerate me with it. And they just go with it. They don't ask questions. And they believe. About a month and a half ago, we were changing out a conveyor from a roller to a slider belt. And we had a section of it that we had to fish underneath two other conveyors with a crane. One of my guys walked up to me and he said, I don't know how the hell you're going to do this, but you always end up doing it. So I'm just going to go with it today. Okay. And so we have a group of people here that are willing to change and try. And that's how we deal with things, is we change. You know, we try to be smarter, faster, and better than anybody else. That's how we respond to the market.
What would you say are some of the biggest changes or innovations that your company has made over the last 20 years?
Our recovery rate is pretty much 2 to 2.5 times anybody else's in the marketplace. It was 50% higher before the new system. And so I think that the main change we've made is that where others have been slow to adapt, we have not. Mm-hmm. And we've gone in and we've made the financial investment. We've made the investment in people. Unlike others, most others use temporary labor. We only use full-time labor here. When possible, we bring people up from within when they show initiative. You know, my laborers make $60,000 a year. That's about 50% more than most of my competitors pay their people here on a full year basis. Now, my laborers work 10 times harder than their people. I mean, these guys, God love them. They are the hardest working people you will find on this planet. And, and I don't interview them. If somebody has to leave for whatever reason, if we need a new person, I walk down the hall during break and say, hey, we need somebody. Mm-hmm. And a day or two later, somebody shows up. It shows up at my office door, and one of the guys will be with him. Here's your new guy. They are self-managing. They, if they bring in somebody new that's not cutting it, they run them off. It's idyllic is what it is. And I couldn't create this group. They somehow just came together. And I live in fear that it's going to blow up. I don't take any credit because I don't understand how they came together and how they maintain themselves. All I know is that we pay them very well and we treat them like adults and human beings and leave them alone.
Okay.
They somehow just seem to get it done. And you will not find a harder working crew anywhere.
So what would you say then, what is your business philosophy? What do you think it takes to be successful in the C&D recycling industry?
Be smarter than the next person and be willing to take risk. Be willing to think outside the box and be willing to fail. Vis-a-vis boat, the machine, the water separator that may be my expensive boat anchor.
Okay.
I hope not.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you have an example of a time that you did fail?
Shingle recycling. I was the last guy to quit. When I finally figured out how to do it efficiently and everything, I failed to address the legislative, political end of it. And that's why it didn't work.
Yeah.
So the last 3 years I did it, I lost money. I finally decided to just quit losing money on it. And had I spent the time perhaps and gotten government on board, it could be vastly different today. Now, granted, I lasted longer than anybody else, but still, in the end, I view it as a failure. We fail at stuff every day, all day long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just trying to limit the size of the failures.
All right. So we talked about a few different, legislative and regulatory concerns that you've had. Thinking about partnering with CDRA on these things, like what are some of the concerns you have at the local, state or federal level?
We have a very unique marketplace here where we have both public and private facilities that are in direct competition.
Mm-hmm.
And that same governmental entity is our regulator. We have gone through a period of a number of years where the relationship was very, very one-sided. There was a management change, an upper management change, fairly recently, and we're starting to see a significant improvement in those relations. But we have a long ways to go, and we have a lot of trust to build. We're a long ways from what I would consider any kind of optimal public-private relationship, marketplace, et cetera. But I do see that we are making some great gains, that they are finally listening to us. And in fact, this week, over the past few months with the task force, we now have transparency of the government transfer operations and their cost. They are now under their policy where they have to run self-supporting rather than being subsidized by the competing private facilities. So it's been pretty hard subsidizing your direct competitor. And I actually, within the last few weeks, that is now over. And they're going to start standing on their own 2 feet. And that, to me, is a huge, huge win. I have to say hats off to Martha down at Metro, the director of WPES. I think we have a really good manager there to work with. You know, it's just a matter, we need to make some changes to some updates. We need mm-hmm. to get more transparency in mm-hmm. recovery rates in financial activities of government. And we need to have rules in place that ensure that this material is actually being recovered, that a C&D, quote, material recovery facility is not acting as a mere transfer station. We also need to, in my feeling, get everybody certified with RCI so that we're all under the same reporting rules, and that the old school ways of let's make up a recovery rate stop. We need the honesty and transparency there. But we're starting that process, and I think we can get there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In terms of your company, what do you have planned for the future? I know you just kind of did the facility upgrade, but what else do you have going on?
Well, the facility upgrade never ends.
Yeah. Very true.
You know, so we go, we burn $7 million on this joint. And did everything work out as we planned? No. But all in all, it worked out as well as we planned. Mm-hmm. You know, you can make budgets all day long, but in the end, things never work quite as you expect. Mm-hmm. But it's been great because, well, you know, we had to change some conveyors and this and that and do a lot of learning through our mistakes. There was not the statement, oh, my God, we bought the wrong machine, that this is a disaster. Okay. And that's very, very frequent with these type of facility upgrades, mm-hmm. is that somebody goes in, does not consider the local material flow laws, rules, customs, whatever, and says, oh, one size fits all, mm-hmm. and the system fails. But what happened that was completely unexpected is that now we're seeing opportunities that we did not perceive would be there. And these are smaller investments, but these are investments that will, you know, yield $50,000 a year, $150,000 a year, and in net profits. And there's a lot of them. Some of them are due to my misdesign of the facility, not knowing any better.
Okay.
Because these things don't come with a rule book or a manual. Mm-hmm. My lack of experience. Some of them are just things that there was no way you would know. I think that the rebuild of the facility just never ends. And especially in a dynamic marketplace with changes, what works this year doesn't necessarily work in 5 years. We will always be changing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, this deal where I have this fantasy that I can somehow, through impact, or I, it's hard for me to explain, remove the paint from wood and gather that paint separate from wood. I wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and think about goofy stuff like this, and then I can't get back to sleep. Look, I'm 62 years old, and I have my own sandbox and my own crane. I'm serious. I have my own toy crane. How many kids, 62 years old, get their own crane? And you know, and that's why I don't want the I don't want it to end. That would be boring.
We'll end there for today. Thank you so much for joining us, and we hope you tune in again next time.